This episode of We Are Libertarians is brought to you by Audible.com. Enjoy one free audiobook courtesy of We Are Libertarians. Choose from more than 100,000 audiobook titles, including works by Ron Paul, Walter Block, Murray Rothbard, and the Cato Institute. Audible.com also has audio of radio and TV programs and audio versions of magazines and newspapers. You can get the Audible app on any mobile device or download the audio to your computer. Go to audibletrial.com/WAL or head to WeAreLibertarians.com and find the link to get one free month of Audible today.
Shorty, get down, grab your keyboard. Got a website you must see now. For libertarian viewpoints, this is your joint. Turn the Fox News down. Commentary is a forte. Each and every day, true play away. I can't get it out of my mind. Wow. I think about the podcast all the time. Wow. A national to the state news. Trust these dudes, it's really, really cool. Spangle, Harrington, and Gold, it's not their fault. Government be acting like some fools. Greg Lenz and Joe Ruiz got some entertaining things for you to read. Oh, baby, it's a perfect 10. If you wanna get in, better read now so you can win. Oh, we are libertarians.
No diggity.
You gotta look it up. Are we a libertarian?
No diggity.
You gotta look it up. Are we a libertarian?
No diggity.
You gotta look it up. Are we a libertarian?
No diggity.
You gotta look it up.
Welcome to We Are Libertarians for this week, and
hello.
As you can imagine, we're going to be talking a lot about Rand Paul, so I hope that for you Creighton fans out there, this is going to be a very, very special episode. I'm fairly certain that Creighton, have you been doing coke off of the hood of your redneck vehicle? Or he showed up and he's like, "Hey man, hey, guess what? Hey, Rand Paul, yeah!" He like went into full Howard Dean mode. He was like, "And I'm gonna support Rand Paul, and I'm gonna support Ron Paul, and I'm gonna support Neil Paul, yeah!"
You know what? He's in like a post orgasmic bliss and glow over there. He's got his hair gelled.
You guys,
he's ready to go.
You guys are just hating because it was that awesome. You can't make fun of him or anything he did, so you just gotta make fun of me for being so happy about it.
Oh no, I'll get started on him later, don't worry.
That voice is the lovely Maya Axton, who will be joining us again this week, and Greg Lenz, say hello.
Hello everybody.
I'm your host Chris Spangle, and over there is Creighton Harrington.
Hello.
Thank you. Creighton always bringing the enthusiasm and excitement
to the intro.
We are libertarians. We're a weekly podcast where we discuss libertarianism from all sides. We take current events and examine them and give you our opinions. All facts may not be accurate, so don't sue us if they're wrong. we're also going to try and fit in Dennis Rodman because that's the... I don't care about Rand
Paul. The worm.
That's my favorite story of the week. Listen... He just like everybody else. He don't want to do war. That's the best. So, just a couple little show notes here. First of all, I'm looking for an intern at work. So if you are listening and you are a college student and you've got about 20 hours a week to work for free alongside with me, we're working on the Advocates for Self-Government. And we work downtown. Send me a note, spangle@weirdlibertarians.com. I'm looking for somebody to come on board and help us out here at my advertising agency. And also, Maya, you've launched another show on Indiana Talks. We're heard on Indiana Talks, which has really become a libertarian network, much to my devious plans. I'm like, hey, Gary Snyder, who runs Indiana Talks, look, LRN.FM, they give their shows away for free. You should have their shows on. And ran the Rand Paul speech in entirety last night. You actually have a new show on Indiana Talks.
Yeah, I don't know how this happened. Gary made one comment, and I kind of took it as seriousness, and I think he was serious, and I have a show.
Yeah, it's called The Uncontrollables.
Yeah, I don't know why I had to say it in that weird voice, but yeah, it's The Uncontrollables, and if you want a description of the show, I don't have one, just because look at the title, think about who's talking about it, and Insanity and World Soup.
Yeah, so when does the first episode air?
tonight, actually, which is... Thursday,
March 7th, as we record this.
Yeah, so. My premiere episode is going to be tonight at 7, or at 9 p.m. to 10 p.m., and then I'm going to record another episode for, I guess, my second one on my regular time slot, Tuesdays at 7 p.m.
All right, so go to iTunes, look up Indiana Talks, get their feed, or look up the Creating Maya on iTunes and get that podcast feed. You'll find that show there somewhere. And do us a big favor. Please, help promote the show. Go to iTunes and give us a 5-star rating or a 4-star rating if you don't like the show. And comment on the podcast on iTunes. That helps us grow in numbers and popularity. And we certainly do appreciate it. Creighton. We're going to let Creighton go first and hopefully let him run out of some words before the rest of us weigh in on Rand Paul. You, my friend, have been... Well, Creighton is to Rand Paul as Galt is to Google.
Hey, don't belittle my respect for the man by saying it is as low as the respect Galt has for Google.
No,
his does not encompass my respect for Rand after yesterday.
You have been on fire. You posted like seven... Every 7 minutes on the Facebook
page. I posted more tweets and Facebook posts yesterday than my whole life combined, without a doubt.
As someone who runs several libertarian Facebook and Twitters, Rand Paul is excellent for social media. I hope he never stops doing what he did.
That plays into a point we have to bring up, his excellence with social media.
All right, go make your point.
Well, I have so many points.
All right, well, let's encompass. All right, let's talk about what's transpired. We have an out of control government that has been using drones overseas to kill terrorists, to kill enemy combatants, and they've killed an American citizen overseas. And
his son.
And his son, his 16-year-old son. And the government's justification was, well, he should have had better parents, which that really made a lot of sense. I think it was Holder that said that. Is Holder or Brennan?
Isn't Anwar al-Awlaki's justification for being killed, isn't it still like basically, well, he was just a bad guy?
He was a bad guy, yeah.
Have they released the direct evidence that he was involved in any terrorist plot?
Not that we've seen.
No, yeah. We've seen.
So at this point, he still was just killed because he was a bad guy who said some bad stuff about the United States.
And through all of this, they've let it slip that imminent doesn't mean immediate. So you could be, you know, immediate in their minds is they see you walking into the Empire State Building with bombs strapped around you, and then they'd use a drone to blow you up, which really doesn't make a lot of sense.
So immediate... To a normal person, like if you're under the immediate threat of getting shot in the face, then that means somebody's got a gun pointed at your face with their finger on the trigger. Apparently, immediate to the federal government means, oh, he's buying a gun. Therefore, you are an immediate threat to getting shot in the face.
Well, where it gets really scary is they've already defined signature drone attacks non-domestically as anytime you demonstrate suspicious behavior or any kind of signature that looks suspicious.
If you're standing next to a person who has been designated as a terrorist and you're 20 years old and you're in a hot zone, you are de facto a terrorist.
You are.
Right. Yeah,
they don't need any identity information or anything.
And that's why the collateral damage counts for drone strikes are so low, is because everyone that gets hit by a drone is de facto a terrorist because they got hit by a drone. It's like, if you get hit by a drone, that makes you a terrorist because the drone blew you up.
Right.
Yep.
So imminent is their standard, and imminent doesn't mean immediate. So if you are somebody who... Let's just say you buy the Anarchist Cookbook off of Amazon. That you may never do anything with it, but in their mind,
way to throw us back to Columbine, you days.
Sorry, man. that could make you imminent. And as Rand Paul repeated over and over and over, he really ran out of material. You think he would have prepared for 13 hours? I mean, geez, come on, Rand. Creighton shaking.
Don't make
his
Creighton
head.
Angry.
You wouldn't like him when he's angry. He's tearing his shirt. Oh, gross.
Third nipple.
So what is that third nipple, man? That's really, really weird. Maya, stop milking him. So he repeated that the Missouri in 2009, was it? 2009, I think they came out with this, the Fusion Center in Missouri.
Yeah, with the homegrown terrorist and what it is.
Homegrown terrorist, anyone who's a member of the Libertarian Party, which he started...
Any third party.
When he started talking about the Libertarian Party, I went full Creighton, and I was like, squee! He mentioned us!
He said it a couple times.
The Constitution Party, the Tea Party, anyone who's pro-life, anyone who is sort of in that, you know, grassroots conservative libertarian movement.
Or a veteran.
Or a veteran. And they could be...
Or if you pay if you buy things with cash.
Yeah, they should be watched with suspicion, because they could have terrorist-like tendencies. So that... You know, and a fusion center is when, and Maya, you know what a fusion center is, right?
They're the devil.
Okay, explain what a fusion center is.
A fusion center is basically a giant information gathering point for the federal government where it works with local, you know, agencies and law enforcement agencies, say it's as the sheriff's department and the local police departments. Any other agency that collects information on individuals is basically shared in a fusion center, and the fusion center is also shared with the FBI, CIA, and federal agencies. And it's just basically a giant data collection point, and it disseminates the information through different reporting procedures and everything else to all the other agencies. Basically a source point control for the DHS.
Right, and our fusion center here in Indianapolis is in the bottom of the state capitol. You can't go to half of the basement now in the Indiana state capitol, because that's where our fusion center is. And people here don't know that we have a fusion center, because they don't tell you that they're creating one. But it is, it's an information gathering center. And the Missouri Fusion Center released this report. So the standards by which one could be considered a terrorist are incredibly flimsy. And we're killing American citizens overseas. So the question naturally is asked, what if you are an American citizen here in America and you are considered a terrorist and we think you're an imminent threat? Would you kill an American citizen on American soil with a drone? And the answer from Eric Holder and the White House is, well, we really can't deal with hypotheticals. The proper
response... He said... It wouldn't be appropriate.
It wouldn't be appropriate.
There are certain he said there are certain situations where I could see that arising if we're talking hypothetically.
Yeah, no, he said that would blah 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 would happen. Well, I mean, if like Pearl Harbor's happening or something.
9/11.
Yeah. And which obviously they weren't talking about.
No.
But he deliberately, I mean, it wasn't even, it was so transparent. He was deliberately evading the question. He was deliberately evading giving a yes or no answer on whether or not he thought it was constitutional to kill some random Joe who is an American who they think is a terrorist, but isn't doing anything at the moment. He's just hanging around.
Let's actually play his own words, and let's play this video. This is Senator Ted Cruz.
Who ate it up yesterday.
He did.
I know. We have to deal with Senator Cruz and Senator Lee, because
we might need to make this like an hour and a half episode, 2 hours, because it's
2 hours.
It's we have so much awesomeness to talk about.
I have so much love to give.
Yeah, but there's a lot of problems and a lot of holes I can start pointing out to you in all of this. So you can have your love fest all you want, but I don't think we need an hour for me to destroy you on it. So right. We'll just get that out.
That's
there.
Why we have Maya on the show. So let's play Senator Cruz grilling Eric Holder. This was actually yesterday. You're listening to We're Libertarians.
In your response to Senator Paul yesterday, you suggested there may well be circumstances in which it is permissible to use drones to target a U.S. citizen on U.S. soil. I'd like to explore those circumstances. And in particular, you pointed to two. You pointed to Pearl Harbor and 9/11, both of which were extreme military attacks on the homeland. Mm-hmm. I want to ask a more specific question. If an individual is sitting quietly at a cafe in the United States, in your legal judgment, does the Constitution allow a U.S. citizen on U.S. soil to be killed by a drone?
For sitting in a cafe and having a cup of coffee?
If that individual is not posing an imminent and immediate threat of death or bodily harm, does the Constitution allow a drone to kill that individual?
on the basis of what you said, I don't think you can arrest that person.
The person is suspected to be a terrorist. You have abundant evidence he's a terrorist. He's involved in terrorist plots. But at the moment, he's not pointing a bazooka at the Pentagon. He is sitting in a cafe. Overseas, the United States government uses drones to take out individuals when they're walking down a pathway, when they're sitting at a cafe. If a U.S. citizen on U.S. soil is not posing an immediate threat to life or bodily harm, does the Constitution allow a drone to kill that citizen?
I would not think that that would be an appropriate use of any kind of lethal force. We would deal with that in the way that we typically deal with a situation like that.
General Holder, my question wasn't about appropriateness or prosecutorial discretion. It was a simple legal question. Does the Constitution allow a U.S. citizen on U.S. soil who doesn't pose an imminent threat to be killed by the U.S. government?
I do not believe that. Again, you have to look at all of the facts, but on the facts that you have given me, and this is a hypothetical, I would not think that in that situation the use of a drone or lethal force would be appropriate, because the possibility...
General Holder, I have to tell you, I find it remarkable that in that hypothetical, which is deliberately very simple, you are unable to give a simple one-word, one-syllable answer, no. I think it is unequivocal that if the U.S. government were to use a drone to take the life of a U.S. citizen on U.S. soil and that individual did not pose an imminent threat, that would be a deprivation of life without due process.
Maybe I've not been clear. I said that the use of lethal force, and I'm saying drones, guns, or whatever else would not be appropriate in that circumstance.
You keep saying appropriate. My question isn't about propriety. My question is about whether something is constitutional or not. As Attorney General, you are the chief legal officer of the United States. Do you have a legal judgment on whether it would be constitutional to kill a U.S. citizen on U.S. soil in those circumstances?
A person who is not engaged, as you've described, and this is the problem with hypotheticals, but the way in which you have described this person sitting at the cafe, not doing anything imminently, the use of lethal force would not be appropriate, would not be something...
I find it remarkable that you still will not give an opinion on the constitutionality. Let me move on to the next topic, because we've gone round and round.
Let me be clear. Translate my appropriate to no. I thought I was saying no, all right? No.
Yeah, no.
Well, then I am glad. After much... gymnastics, I am very glad to hear that it is the opinion of the Department of Justice that it would be unconstitutional to kill a U.S. citizen on U.S. soil if that individual did not pose an imminent threat. That statement has not been easily forthcoming. I wish you had given that statement in response to Senator Paul's letter asking you it.
I really find it hard to believe that it is this hard of a question. Why do you think there is such reluctance for the chief, the person who is the one representing the Constitution, essentially? I just find it stunning. What the F is their problem?
The way I kind of looked at Holder's response, because Holder is totally beholden to the Obama, to, you know, everything's got to be vetted by Obama before he can kind of go on and say it. So that's why he wasn't being so forthcoming so easily, is because he wanted to make sure he didn't say anything that the president could get him on saying you shouldn't have said that. But that being said, because he was so obtuse about it, because he was so stalling and evading or evasive, means that he knows that giving a simple no might piss Obama off.
Yeah.
Which in and of itself is horrifying. And that is totally what drove the whole thing yesterday, is because it's so transparent. He had to give so much mental gymnastics, and he had to evade the question so much because he's not allowed to say things the president doesn't approve of in committee, and he didn't want to say something the president wouldn't approve of, and apparently one of those things could possibly be it's unconstitutional to kill Americans on American soil if they're not posing a danger.
Talk about what Rand Paul repeated about Google. He repeated it several times last night about how Obama said, well, there may be different rules between killing inside America and outside of America. And Rand Paul says, so that means they've thought about it.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, there shouldn't, you know, I'm not even for killing American citizens who are enemy combatants who are not presently engaged in fighting the United States military. An American citizen who's just sitting in his house or sitting in a cafe but is suspected of terrorism, I'm not okay with you killing them.
Yeah.
Period. If they're shooting a gun and they're trying to take the life of an American soldier or some, you know, someone else, any human being, violating any rights, like, I'm not okay with you killing an American citizen. Period. Whether you don't lose your rights when you step across our borders.
I think there's more to it though than that. Like with Holder, no president wants their attorney general to box them in on policy. So anytime
it's not policy, it's the freaking Constitution.
I know, but it's an issue where if he says no, which he should have.
Republican, I'm going to strangle this.
I understand. I'm just trying to tell you what I think happened with Eric Holder in his mind in real time. I think, one, he got that question. He knows he can't say no, or he puts the president in a box on policy. And two, he's supposed to be the country's preeminent legal person. I mean, he is the top lawyer in America. And the point, when he got that, I mean, I couldn't believe he took the bait, but he immediately started doing essentially intellectual masturbation, concocting ideas just to show off.
He did exactly what Ted Cruz wanted him to do.
Right.
Exactly what he wanted him to do.
He wanted him to screw up so badly
that... He wanted him to squirm in his seat and...
That four little fat nerds would play it on their podcast the next day. And that's how bad this guy screwed up.
I don't think he screwed up. He was given a hypothetical straw man. He should have just said a lot. You know, that's the logical fallacy. You're done. Stop asking me dumb questions.
No, it wasn't a straw man though.
It was an example. It's circumstantial.
The definition of a straw man is you misrepresent someone's position and then defeat the misrepresentation. He was asking him asking him an example. He gave him an example and asked him in this situation where there is a setup so that it is totally plausible that somebody who may be engaged in helping out Al-Qaeda, or they're talking bad about America, whatever, but at the current moment they're sitting and they're not doing anything, they're not immediately threatening anybody's life or bodily harm in any way, would it be constitutional for the government to kill this person without a trial? That is a plausible scenario, and it's not a straw man because he's asking a specific question about legality, and regardless, it doesn't matter. Even if it was a straw man, even if it was something they would never possibly see themselves as being in a position of. Period. The fact remains that even in this hypothetical, that is very simple and very clear, he would not answer it directly. If it wasn't a big deal, if it was as easy as saying, "Oh, this is a straw man," he could have just said, no, it's not constitutional in that situation. But he didn't.
Well, and how is he supposed to answer? We've passed, you know, the Republicans gave us the Patriot Act, the NDAA of 2012, and all these other great things. Has anyone actually gone through and know if it's legal or not to kill American citizens? Because it actually obviously is. I mean, these people want to make these big grand stands on constitutionality when 90% of the bills and laws we have in place are unconstitutional in the first place. So I think that stinks, you know, just absolutely out of the park. But with far as with Holder, I don't think he did that horrible of a job, and I don't think he's beholden to Obama. But you got to think of all this crap the Republicans have pushed down our throat over the last decade or two, with all the different kind of you know American exceptionalism, and yeah, we're gonna kill millions of people around the world because they have brown skin and we don't like them. Who knows if it's legal or not to kill people on U.S. soil? I mean, the police departments all around the country, state and local, kill people all the time with almost no reason. So why is it, you know, he's talking about the federal government. Maybe they can. But.
You know, I read a great response to that line of argument, that this is how it's been, you know, even if they're making this grandstand, this is already policy. What is he talking about? This has been policy. The blah, 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 blah. You know, the same argument can be made for stuff like the Civil Rights Act, and I'm going there. The same argument could be made for something
like...
Oh, no,
he didn't.
It could be something... Because stuff like Jim Crow laws existed for a long time. but they still managed to say, yeah, this is something that needs to be addressed long after they existed. So regardless of whether or not the Republican Party put in place laws that allow Americans to be killed on U.S. soil, the question still deserves to be brought up in the U.S. in any context, to be talked about in a national dialogue. And that is what is so great about what happened yesterday, is Rand Paul said, screw you to the entire leadership system of the Senate. He took advantage of a window where the Democrats just forgot to make it so he couldn't get up there and take the floor. He took advantage of it, and he stood there for 13 hours and made sure everyone in America knew that this is a problem that you need to worry about. That's what happened yesterday, regardless of whether or not policy has existed this way and blah, blah, and the Republicans sucked for 10 years and Obama sucked. It doesn't matter. What happened yesterday, what Rand Paul and Ted Cruz and Mike Lee did yesterday was effing heroic. And there is no way you're going to convince me otherwise.
Well, that's fine that you think it's so heroic to fight for the government to be our savior. But, you know, it still stands. These people... How long, you know, Senator Rand Paul, he's run, and this Cruz guy, he's newer guy. All these guys are sitting here running. They're doing these little publicity stunts and everything else. But to what end? I mean, Rand Paul left out a lot of stuff he could have really hit on. He could have been absolute fire and brimstone. He could have made his dad look like a sock puppet, but he didn't. He kept it light. He kept it easy. And he just kind of skirted around that line that you shouldn't cross. And same thing with Ted Cruz. I mean, whatever. So it's, you know, talking about taking people to task and everything else, if people actually wanted to talk about constitutionality, Rand Paul would have been up there asking for the impeachment of Obama. That's what he would have done.
You mean Ron Paul? Ron Paul would have been asking for impeachment.
Rand.
Okay, if he were doing what he was supposed to do.
If he was really caring about constitutionality and what's lawful and what's not, they would have all instantly taken office the first day and go, you need to resign. They should have done the same thing during Bush because they're and everything else and saying all of you people that voted, all of you senators voted for all this unconstitutional stuff because we care about it just so much. You guys need to resign or be held to, you know, the high crimes and misdemeanors against your oath to office. That would be a real standpoint and something that could actually turn into actionable things that will actually accomplish something versus this. I made a speech. This is going to look really good on my record for 2016. Woo, go me.
Oh, I totally disagree. I honestly believe that he believed in it in every fiber of his body, and he wasn't just up there to make a political move. I don't doubt that he knew that it was a political move.
He's a politician.
He knew it was had political points, and I don't necessarily have a problem with getting political pull out of something like that, but I don't believe for a second that he walked up there because he knew it was going to make him look good. He walked up there because one specific...
And I'm not disagreeing with that point either.
One specific question. I mean, honestly, the reason it was a filibuster 13 hours, you know, it's talking about the same points, blah, 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 blah. I mean, everybody's going to talk about how it was just repetitive and whatnot. The only reason it went on for 13 hours is... Well, honestly, the only reason it didn't go beyond 13 hours is it looked likely because he had to pee.
Yeah, but hardly stand still.
But the only reason it went longer than like 5 minutes is because the Obama administration would not answer the simple question whether or not it was unconstitutional to kill an American citizen on American soil who is not engaged in imminent hostilities against the United States. The Obama administration would not answer that question the entire time. That's why it took so long.
That goes back, though, to their interpretation of the Constitution. Holder and the president see it as a living, breathing document that can be changed, and they don't like being restricted. That's exactly why.
And you know what? And people have been trying to make fun of how Holder released it, said the answer to that question is no, and they're saying, oh, look how look how short he talked for 13 hours and this is like one sentence, and he's but the fact remains that the Obama administration, now it's on record that the Obama administration does not, they believe that they have limits on their power.
Yeah, basically here's what Creighton is talking about. So Rand Paul asked another question of the Justice Department and the Obama administration, and Eric Holder wrote today to Senator Paul, "It has come to my attention that you have now asked an additional question. Does the president have the authority to use a weaponized drone to kill an American not engaged in combat on American soil? The answer to that question is no. Sincerely, Eric Holder.
And you know the way they're going to whittle...
Which is the political equivalent of whatever.
Yeah. It is either that or they're going to try and later in the future wiggle around. It's like, well, he was engaged in combat by sending, by sending a bad email.
Rewind that part of the podcast and listen to that. There's plenty of nuance and out in that statement.
He didn't even send that letter to Rand Paul's office. They sent it to media, press, and several other politicians. It didn't even come to Rand Paul.
But the one thing that made me... I can't say that. Everything about yesterday made me happy. But every single minute that passed by yesterday, every single minute that he was up there talking was another minute of terrible PR for the Obama administration.
Oh.
Every single minute. And at the same time...
He's so screwed.
I totally disagree with you on that. Because if you look at the media last night at midnight... All of new media was focused on it. Fox was focused on it. MSNBC was focused on it. But the Washington Post, the New York Times, CNN, traditional media did not focus on it at all. It wasn't even on the front page at midnight. I don't think the regular media really paid attention to it at all, which means your average person, my wife came home last night and said, "What's this about?" She wouldn't have heard about it or had seen it going on had I not been watching it. And I explained it to her, and she goes, "Wow, so when does he get to pee?" Oh, he's going to get a urinary tract infection.
Exactly.
That's my wife's comment.
Most people don't care about the functions of the Senate and how that works. They don't care and they're turned off by it. So, yeah, he really spoke to that whole shebang was really spoke to all of us politicos and all the people who are into this stuff. And like Chris said, the new media. But for the most part, this is going to get blown over. The majority of the country is not going to even notice this. The media is going to ignore it and ridicule him. They're going to use a whole bunch of what he says in response to this against him, and it emboldened the Obama army.
No.
It was great for the people that are following, you know, that are kind of libertarian-esque, that really like what he said and like Rand Paul. It was great for them. I don't believe it's going to have... lasting effects outside of that, because it was a senatorial procedure of filibustering. Most people would see the word filibustering and go, "Haha, that's a funny word," and then go on their way.
I totally disagree. From my experience, from what happened yesterday, it was 100% the definition of grassroots, organic, whatever you want to call it. I mean, he was trending worldwide, number one on Twitter. This was
a hugely liberal base.
This was heard by more than just the politicos. Just because CNN or MSNBC didn't talk about it, as Fox News didn't talk about it either. Drudge Report had it on the front of their page the whole day. Yeah, so the more biased news sources did bring it up and talk about it more. But the fact remains that there is no way that the amount of support that came out of new media yesterday was only seen by people in the libertarian-esque bubble.
A lot of people heard about it, and they saw it, and they were like, "Holy crap, this is pretty cool." How many actually people listened to it? Actually, you know, we live in a world, you know, you're talking about it trended on Twitter. Twitter, the place it's known for, the 144 character limit. He's a 13-hour speech.
Man, you're really harsh on my mellow.
Yeah, no, I'm just...
Where's the hope and the optimism in this story?
Okay, no, where I'm trying to come from in my main basis here is I'm tired of all you people with hero worship. This is one man, maybe two up there, and you guys are making such a big deal. They're just a stupid politician that's not... If he stands alone, no matter how big you think your grassroots is, the amount of people in this country getting free handouts and loves the state and just worship it, you're never going to defeat with these little tiny speeches that speak to people with an IQ higher than 90, which is
so
only about 40% of the country.
So what am I supposed to do? Just stop giving a crap, curl up in a fetal position and just cry and wait for everything to die?
Tell Rand Paul that he needs to stop just talking about things and actually do something.
He does do something.
Oh, yeah.
Within
the confines of politics.
Give me a break.
You know, the same thing we did back in the 70s and say with gold, water, and everything else. Yeah, we're going to fight in the system and we're gonna take these politicians to task when they do something wrong, like we were going to do with Nixon and getting rid of the gold standard. But it's been, 40 years and it's still not back?
No. Rand Paul, the only thing that I've ever experienced that people can disagree with Rand Paul on policy is that he voted for sanctions. everything else that he has done voting wise has been remarkably good. And he has been, he went up there and pulled the lone man amongst the den of vipers and thieves and just stood up there for 13 hours and talked to, he talked through the media that you guys are talking about. It was that didn't cut, he cut through all of that and got to people anyway. There, you can't trend worldwide on Twitter when only Ron Paul Republicans are talking about it.
Yeah, here's where I think the positive outcome of it comes. I think that he, I think you're right. I think he showed the ineffectiveness and the fact that the old media does not get it, that new media like ours is the future, because this was where a lot of people, you know, the world is becoming more based around communities. So people are going into communities and sharing information with each other. I mean, heck, look at our Facebook and our Twitter.
Oh, exploded.
It exploded. I mean, it's amazing. I also think that he created a new coalition of independents. I think that this was a catalyst for bringing people together and maybe starting some conversations that didn't exist before. When you've got Glenn Beck, Mitch McConnell, Van Jones, and Code Pink all agreeing with each other about an
John
issue.
John Stewart.
Eric Erickson, who is a total red state douche, was for Rand. Dana
Rush Limbaugh.
What's her face that fills in for Bill O'Reilly all the time?
Oh, yeah, Laura Ingram.
Right.
I mean, there was a wide array of people who disagree with what I believe in on a number of things that stood, that sat there and said, Rand Paul, I stand with Rand. I mean, they were totally for it. That just doesn't happen every day. It just does, and when it happens, it is significant. It isn't something to be said, this is going to be forgotten in 5 weeks. No one's going to care, because that crap will matter in the future. When people start hearkening back to what people believe in, that crap will matter. You don't reach this vast amount of people and it just be insignificant. I'm sorry. Yesterday was effing important.
Yeah. The first point of contact for a lot of people with Rand Paul was the Tea Party in 2010.
Right.
Otherwise, he hasn't been very visible. Now it's another time. People are going to start to recognize him. And it was even bigger for the Republican Party. Like, there's going to be a war. It's going to be Lindsey Graham and John McCain.
After today, after this morning, oh my God. The lines have been drawn.
Oh, McCain goes, well, this just shows people don't like our Senate rules, and they're going to say we abuse them. No one was talking about that.
Let's finish about the coalition, and then we'll talk about the other players in this drama. You know, I think that it can be important. It doesn't mean that it's going to be important. It means that it can be, and I think there are two outcomes that will come from this that I hope will come out of this. One, people on the left and the right and if you're looking at the diamond, people on the left and the right and the libertarian quadrant who care about civil liberties have rallied around Rand Paul and this issue, and he has coalesced a lot of those people.
And it's not just civil liberties.
Hold on, we have something that we have in common, so there's some common ground there, and we're not so divided. We're less divided on the independent sphere. You know, hardcore Republicans and hardcore Democrats, they're just going to follow their party blindly, but I think this large group of independents in the middle can come together. Secondly, I think it's an absolute shaming of the Democrats, and it has really, I think, for a lot of people on the left and a lot of people in the Democratic Party who care about civil liberties, people like Ron Wyden, they look around and they go, where are our people?
Did you see the post today of, like, the excuses that people like Bernie Sanders had?
Oh, yeah.
It was just like,
I'm busy with other things.
Yeah, there's other things that are busy. Like, we can't just go down to the floor every time somebody makes a fuss.
Ironically, though, Bernie Sanders voted against Brennan, and Ron Wyden voted for Brennan's confirmation.
It can't be understated how cataclysmic it was for the president yesterday. He's got a downward trending approval rating. A Tea Partier out-liberaled him.
Mm-hmm.
He lost the news cycle.
That's what I mean. That's right. It was so bad PR for Obama and the Democrats because Rand Paul is out civil libertying them. I mean, and even more than that, he's out transparencying them. I just made a verb of that.
I say
he is outdoing them on transparency.
I think PR maybe not the right word. I think foundation shaking for
image.
Soul searching
image
within the liberal and the Democrats start to take place.
Okay, let me rephrase it. I'm sorry, Indiana Talks. He made Obama and the Democrats look.
He did. It cannot. I mean, it really cannot be understated. He lost the news cycle. Dow's at an all-time high.
Yeah.
Unemployment claims dropped to their lowest levels in years. He's got a fight coming up for the debt ceiling in May. The sequester didn't work out in his favor because Boehner got the discretionary cap. I mean, he has no leverage going forward. He met with Senate Republicans when that would have been shown as like a huge deal in bipartisanship. That turns out to be a bad thing and a negative.
Right. It just shows them. It just shows them being like this cadre of I'm going to keep saying. Vipers and thieves, man.
Part of what I think plays into the positivity of this is the fact that the sequester debate, you know, the debt ceiling stuff at the end of the year and the fiscal cliff was met with terror and frustration and anger and why can't they work together? And this time with the sequester, I don't know about you guys, but my Facebook and my Twitter and all the non-political people and the political people, it was just mocking. They were openly mocking our government. They were openly mocking our president, you know, and it had just shifted from anger at politicians who can't get stuff done to just laughing at them, at their inability. And I thought that was a different shift. I thought that was interesting. One final word. Maya?
Final word on what? The whole thing's a joke? I mean...
All right, well, that's the final word then, joke.
No, it was a joke because Rand Paul did one thing that I had, you know, it was an amazing speech. He did an amazing thing. It was really neat, I guess, is a word I want to use to describe it. But throughout his entire speech, he peppered it with support of the growing militarization of the police and the police state. He did nothing to admonish the growing police state. He said, you know, America shouldn't be a battlefield. Well, what the hell? Yes, it is. It is every day when there's hundreds of warrantless raids, when the cops like the LAPD are burning people alive and terrorizing an entire town. And you want to sit there and use your little stumpet to talk about drones? He endorsed drone usage in the United States.
But what... As a senator, he doesn't have a magic wand that he can fix every single thing.
But if he's going to talk for 13 hours and then start repeating himself because he supposedly ran out of stuff to talk, he can talk about that, and he can't give a free pass to the police state because the police state is with fusion centers and the DHS and everything else like we saw here with the Super Bowl just a couple years ago. It's an extension of the federal government, and it's been militarized. And they're giving them equipment, military equipment. So if he wants to use his big stump speech and talk about a battlefield America and all his little principles and the Constitution, he needs to address the thing fully.
Hey, don't go down the route of he didn't give us utopia today. He didn't give us a utopia. He gave us awesomeness. All right.
So, about one particular thing.
No,
he gave a free
What you're saying is he didn't say the most perfect thing ever. Therefore, everything he said is not worth listening.
No, I'm saying he has an underlying tone where he endorsed the usage of drones in the United States, and he gave a free pass multiple times.
He didn't give a free pass to crap. He spent the whole time saying that we have constitutional rights that the president can't go over. He went to even deeper than the police state. He said your rights supersede the state. And the federal government cannot trounce on
them. But he gave a free pass with what he said in the language he used. He gave a free pass to the growing police state. Period. That's what he did.
And let's not forget, he didn't even plan on doing this yesterday. He didn't even plan on doing this yesterday.
Well, then that's the thing, then. If he had to plan this out, maybe those aren't his real principles. If he can't admonish the police state in a 13-hour speech, maybe he actually agrees with it and he wants to support it with some of the stuff he said.
All right, Creighton gets the last word, and then Greg. Greg gets the last word.
No, hang on. So we're not done talking about this yet.
No, we're not done talking. Okay. I'm going to move on to...
This is a randathon.
Yes,
okay.
I know.
We'll be here till tomorrow.
We're hardcore.
13 hours.
No, so seriously. This.
You can come on my show and talk about it there, and I'll hit you with a baseball bat.
This is the thing. You can't.
Maya is the Westies of the libertarians.
Rand Paul.
Google it.
When you go up there for 13 hours and you focus on, from a politics perspective, he was asking the president to answer one question. And when, from a more philosophical perspective, let's not underscore, you know, try to understate what happened. He went on the Lysander Spooner's quote is on the public record now. I mean, he said things that every libertarian loves to hear. That America is not a democracy, it's a republic. That he quoted Madison in the Federalist Papers.
He used the word libertarian.
He used the word libertarian. I mean, he went up there and he said to so many articles I've read, he spoke through Congress, he spoke through major media, and he spoke straight to the American people, and he said, "You have rights that the Constitution is meant to protect."
Guarantees.
These are not rights that exist because of the state. These are not rights that exist because of the federal government. These are rights that exist independent of the federal government, and it is you should not have to ask the federal government to tell you whether or not they're going to respect your rights. He went up there for 13 hours trying to get the federal government to say, "We will respect a person's right to life and due process." That is significant.
I understand Maya's argument, though, because Maya has the positions of an extreme, extreme minority pretty much anywhere else. And that doesn't mean they're not well thought out. They're very well thought out. They're very well informed, but not many people share them. And so when a politician, the closest thing you're ever going to get to someone in your court was up on stage yesterday, and he touched on what you wanted to hear, but he didn't go the full way. And so,
never let the perfect get in the way of the good.
Yes,
the perfect is not the enemy of the good.
I don't look to a messiah like all you Ron Paul,
no,
Rand Paul people do.
It's not
the messiah complex, and y'all put them up on these pedestals. I'm not looking for anyone to save me in the government. I don't think by giving up my powers as an individual to a politician will save me.
That is not
That's
at all
where I'm coming from.
That
That's
is
exactly
not at all
what
we're
saying.
No,
these guys
I will give you
preaching.
I will give you a perfect analogy. Analogy of what I'm trying to say. And I made this point to Chris before we started. The way I looked at how Rand Paul acted yesterday was the way that I think lawyers look at Atticus Finch from To Kill a Mockingbird. And I even said, I wish I could have seen the gallery, because when he walked out and he said, I yield the floor, they clapped and the gallery clapped. I mean, the first thing that went through my head was Atticus Finch at the end of that
movie.
That at the end of
the
trial.
Second was fervent masturbation.
Yeah.
No, but seriously. I don't look at him as some deity. I don't look at him as some messiah. I look at him as a person who has earned my utmost respect for what he did yesterday.
I think it's okay.
That's you, and I'm not talking directly to you. I'm talking to 90% of the people that are supporting him, just like people supporting Ron Paul.
I don't think they're making him messianic.
Really? He's our savior? Did you see all the memes going around and all the memes going around right now that he's going to save us, that he's going to take our country back? The same crap we saw with Ron Paul.
There certainly is. You cannot deny, Creighton, that there is, with the Pauls, a certain cult of personality.
There is a cult of personality. But what I'm trying to say is I think that he broke through just that demographic and reached more people who now look at him as more than just a Paul and look at him as a guy that earned your damn respect.
I will say that I am definitely in that camp, and I think anybody who has listened to this podcast over the last 36 episodes knows that my relationship with Ron and Rand Paul, especially Rand, has not always been... I mean, I'm a libertarian party member because of Ron Paul. I respected Rand, but I never really was into Rand. Like Creighton, that's his, like, he's got like fat heads of Rand Paul on his wall. Like, I didn't get it.
No, I don't.
But I certainly have a newfound I certainly have a newfound respect for.
No, my screensaver is George Washington killing zombies, and I swear to God, I have that picture.
Right. So I have a newfound respect for him. Certainly. So I do think that there is a certain amount of truth. I mean, it's not hero worship. I'm not that type of person. But I have always been. I guess maybe it's jealousy or envy or annoyance at the cult of personality surrounding the Pauls, because there are so many other great libertarians out there who are doing a lot of great work, and they don't get half of the attention that Ron and Rand Paul do. And, you know, I just think that we should judge people based on their merits and not because of the last name. And I think Rand Paul certainly earned some merits yesterday, big time.
Yesterday was just a great day for liberty in the Constitution. I mean, it was a celebration of it.
I said it today. Yesterday was, I think, the greatest day that the Liberty Movement has had.
It was like the Constitution Super Bowl. Everybody
really was
on Twitter and Facebook talking about libertarianism and Super Bowl. And I think that's why, like, I think we have a hostility towards Maya and her opinion, because it was just felt good to have one win for once in our lives. It felt good to like have something positive and not just have like be beat down. Like,
I mean,
somebody is on our TV talking about
Beck
constitutional principles.
And Jeffrey Tucker summed it up on our Facebook wall perfectly.
Let me read this to you. All right, Jeffrey Tucker writes from Laissez-Faire Books. To all people who are sending me evidence of Rand Paul's various heresies, you can save your bandwidth. I'm not interested in saint-making or witch-burning. I'm only interested in one thing: progressive reductions of the role of all government power in people's lives, all the way to zero, if possible. Whatever brings that about, in whatever sector it happens, and whether it happens slowly, by steps, or all in one fell swoop, I'm for it. I really don't care who or what makes a contribution to this end or how it comes about. So long as it is ethical and it actually achieves the aim of human liberation, the mother of all progress, order, and higher civilization. I don't think any one of the four of us can argue with that.
No, but I saw yesterday as a depressing thing.
Of course, you and your giant butt.
Yesterday was depressing. It really was. Is it that's what excites us? That is what's considered a win? Really? In this day and age, it's 2013, and we have so many things going wrong. We have no constitutional freedoms that are not being violated. We're killing millions of people around the world without anyone the anti-war movement's dead. But Rand Paul's 13-hour filibuster was what we consider a win. That is absolutely pathetic.
No, you're just out 100%.
No, you're
dead wrong. You're 100% wrong.
No, it's depressing to think about. I had, you know, I have plenty of people agreements, so don't call me an extreme minority. But
well, you are.
Sorry, you know, I'm going to be the person. No, I'm not going to say that on air. But but it was. No, for me to sit there and look at it and know that people like my parents, you know, would get on a plane in the 80s with a gun and protect themselves. Hell, my dad's only 60, and he would, all the way up until middle school, he was taking a gun to school and sitting up against the wall. And he wasn't just some podunk town. It still wasn't that long ago, but now this little speech talking about high-tech advanced weaponry killing people in or off our soil, that's a win. I think that's depressing.
No,
and I think the point to take from it is that we need to really step up our game. Rand Paul may have just opened, you know, cracked the door, but he just unlocked the door. But we need to open it and go through without any kind of reservations about what needs to be done. Hopefully he can speak a little bit more to this and fire some more Twitter followers up. But I think it states that what I got from this is that we're in a very, very pathetic state in this country, and to consider that a win, something needs to change where that, his little speech, is boring because it's the norm.
Is the normal state. All right, that is where you're right, but I think you're wrong to make anyone feel guilty for actually enjoying the fact that there was a conversation on a national stage about moving in a positive direction.
And that just doesn't happen.
That doesn't happen.
And it was so underdog.
Oh.
I think that's what made it so awesome.
Oh, yeah.
It was so underdog. He snuck in there, took the floor, just like Jimmy Stewart, and he talked about what freaking mattered for 13 hours, and there's nothing that the leadership or anybody could have done to stop him. When Mitch McConnell knows that he has to support Rand Paul, you did something.
Oh yeah, and he wanted him to not even get elected.
Yeah,
I mean,
he fought against him.
Yeah, I hated seeing that little bit of negative sentiment that I did see yesterday by some of the people that, you know, have similar views to mine. I didn't like seeing that because it's a start. It's not the end game. It was our red meat for people that love the liberty and love the Constitution.
Right.
And you can't have you ever read William F. Buckley, Spangle?
A little bit.
Yeah.
Okay, he made a
over there?
Oh yeah.
Creighton's just in a mood today.
William F. Buckley.
He's a cold shower after all this
he popularized a phrase called "Don't immonetize the eschaton." And it led to the Buckley rule of electing the most electable candidate. But what that means is
it's Yale. Don't worry about it.
William F. Buckley likes to talk.
He's a wordsmith.
Yes, he was, and he talked. He talked like this.
He was your typical.
What are they gonna do?
But it was a great message in that saying, and what that means is, don't try to bring about the end times, or don't try to bring about a utopia that's not of this world. There's a strain of that just crapped on everyone yesterday.
And
I hated it.
And that's my thing. Quit making the perfect the enemy of the good. Stop thinking that perfection is all. We can't stop until we have perfection.
Your mic's off because we're moving on. All right, let's talk about. You are a utopian person, but you're not. You're a pragmatic voluntarist utopian. Nope, your mic's off too because we're moving on. Everybody's mic's off except for mine. All right, I want. Let's talk about some of the other players. Let's start with Cruz and Lee, and then move on to Marco Rubio. Ugh. Or do we want to start with Marco Rubio?
No, let's talk about Cruz and Lee first. Let's all not right. damper our...
We don't even have to get to Rubio.
Yeah, we don't have...
No, I want to...
We got to talk about it.
You're prepared for Rubio?
Yeah, we'll talk about it after
oh,
Cruz.
Oh, man.
Because another awesomeness and the perfect storm of awesomeness... Was that yesterday was the anniversary of the Alamo?
Yep, yes. It was the anniversary to the day.
God, you can't write this stuff, man.
Oh. The stars were aligned on every level.
Oh, my God.
I told you guys that this show would be extra Creighton today. So if this is a Creighton-loving show, I think you guys broke my headphones or something.
Remember the Alamo!
All of a sudden, I can't hear as loud as I used to. So Cruz and Lee, clearly there was some coordination between Ted Cruz from Texas and Mike Lee from Utah and Rand Paul from Kentucky. They were there to sort of help him out, give him a break from talking. You know, even if you we played the Glenn Beck before we started, just so these guys could hear the recap that Rand Paul had with Glenn Beck this afternoon. And his voice is all raspy, you know. And so those guys were there to help give a break, and people popped in. And Marco Rubio tried, and a few others tried.
Careful, no hate crimes.
But you know, Cruz and Lee, they're Republicans, and until you know, Rand Paul, being Ron Paul's son, I've always given him a little bit of extra libertarian points. And everybody always says, "Oh, Mike Lee, Ted Cruz, they're great libertarians." And I'm like, "Okay, well, until there's a Republican president, listen, I just know that when there's a Republican president, Ted Cruz and Mike Lee are probably going to cheat on me." But at least we had last night.
Yeah, yeah. No,
they're on your side.
I will not say that Ted Cruz is. At this point, he has not convinced me that he is a Rand Paul.
No,
he is very much. I really liked what he did yesterday, and I have great hope that he recognizes that he needs to keep doing stuff like that if he wants to survive. Mike Lee, I've always had a soft spot for because he's been saying this stuff far longer. He's been there he came in just the same time that Rand did,
yep.
And he's been doing stuff like that too. In the Liberty Movement, it never caught as big of a, it never raised as much of an eyebrow for people because it wasn't Rand, but he has been one of those guys that has been consistently, he isn't perfect either, but he's been consistently being a kind of Rand Paul-esque kind of guy. Ted Cruz is new. He came just this last election. I know a lot of people who worked on his campaign that swear he is one of the best people that you could possibly think.
And I will say for Ted Cruz, Texas libertarians have a special reputation,
yep,
for being the most libertarian. They're like Maya.
They're old West libertarians.
You want to say Maya is a small percentage? You go to Texas, that's the majority. I mean, the hardcore libertarians. And, you know, a lot of them really supported Cruz and I think voted for him,
I guess what I'm saying is I will give Cruz the benefit of the doubt.
It was a great rebranding day for him because he's kind of gotten portrayed as like a Coke crony,
yeah,
and you know,
right,
like a fake tea partier. And yesterday, you couldn't hit him for that at all. I mean, he changed the ball game.
I mean, when he brought those tweets out and started reading them, I went,
yeah. So I would say that my opinion on these guys, even Rand Paul, still. Is I'm not going to call them libertarians with a small L, although I will certainly say that I think Rand Paul is like 90% there for
me. Will you at least call them Liberpublicans?
Yes.
Okay.
Now, Mike Lee and Ted Cruz, I think that when there is a Republican in office, I don't think they would be doing that yesterday.
No.
Rand Paul, I think, would have been doing that yesterday. So it, at least it would have lasted maybe like 7 hours.
And are we going to jump to the fact that we are we going to jump to the to Graham and McCain yet?
Oh, that's after Marco Rubio. Okay. Let's deal with our little friend Rubio here. Rubio totally exposed himself for what everyone in the libertarian movement knows he is, which is a little establishment, state-loving weasel.
Shill.
Shill. Whore. Absolute. What is that?
Whore.
He exactly. That is his perfect.
Statist whore.
That is exactly
Tell us what
was.
You really think.
He came out and he...
He didn't... You know, somebody should have thrown a water bottle at him.
Preface this. He started the day... He knew what was going on. He knew Rand Paul was filibustering.
Right.
He started the day saying he was snowed in.
Yeah, he did. He did.
He did not plan to go out there. He only went out there because everyone knew... Rand Paul was shaking crap up, and he had to go out there to save his image.
And it was going to be a day where, you know, Rubio in a lot of the early polls has been leading the pack, and a lot of Republicans were very disappointed in Rand Paul for doing a competing address with Marco Rubio because that was Rubio's big chance. And I think that totally flip-flopped yesterday.
Oh my God.
You know, when Marco Rubio comes out and is going to throw support behind his buddy and stand up for the Constitution, you know what Marco Rubio really argued for yesterday?
Procedure.
Procedure and transparency and getting an answer from the Obama administration. It wasn't about principle. It wasn't an agreement with what Rand Paul was saying, like Cruz and Lee. There were very few guys who came out and really just 100% endorsed Rand Paul and his message. Lee, Cruz, Wyden. I would put Toomey in that. Toomey had some really strong remarks. You watched most of it, so you may have a better... But there were guys... You know, McConnell was like 75% behind Rand Paul.
McConnell was reluctantly... I think... Honestly, I saw McConnell, and I realized he did not like that Rand Paul was saying these, and he didn't like that he was kind of forced into that position. But I honestly think that he respected Rand yesterday.
Oh, yeah.
I honestly think he went down there because he respected Rand for standing up there and doing that all day. And I honestly think that Rand Paul is the reason that Mitch McConnell voted against Brennan today.
I have a fine-tuned BS meter when it comes to politicians after 10 years of exposure, and I didn't detect any BS when it came to Mitch McConnell and his comments about Rand Paul. Like, it seemed like there was a genuine like of Rand Paul when he made his comments. Now, Marco Rubio was... The BS meter went off immediately.
Oh, my
And
God.
I just started pounding his Twitter like, you're a phony.
This is all that needs to be said about Rubio. Rand Paul quoted Spooner. He quoted Madison. He quoted the Federalist Papers. He quoted all these various, you know, paragons of liberty.
Alice in Wonderland?
Did he? Well, he referenced it.
He referenced it.
Yeah, I mean that's pretty big though.
But he quoted all these paragons of liberty. He quoted all these paragons of liberty, classical liberal thought. Marco Rubio goes up and quotes The Godfather and Wiz Khalifa. I swear to God.
And he hadn't even been speaking for 5 minutes.
But you know what? You gotta say that's authentic. That's who Rubio is.
Yeah,
there's no
shallow.
Yeah, he's not a philosopher,
not a deep
or political
thinker.
Theorist.
I mean, yeah, of course. If you're gonna quote Madison, I'm gonna be like,
that was when Creighton really when I knew Creighton was dead serious in the chat. He was like, he just quoted Madison.
No, when
give me a beach.
I tell you what, my eyes glazed over when he said America is not a democracy. It's a republic. That's when my eyes glazed over.
He fell on a fainting couch. He had to get smelling salts.
Do a lot of people know Lysander Spooner in the audience, would you say?
Oh, yeah.
I would say yes.
That was my first introduction to him, and he started a rival to the post office that got shut down. That's fantastic.
Yes.
Yeah. Lysander Spooner
he was an anarchist.
Yeah.
But he was an abolitionist. Quick digression. Lysander Spooner is the reason that Frederick Douglass supported the Constitution.
Really?
Yes. No Lysander kidding. Spooner convinced Frederick Douglass that the Constitution does not support slavery.
That Lysander Spooner is the ultimate libertarian test. Like, if you want to know if somebody is really a libertarian, you don't give them the world's smallest political quiz. You walk up and you just say, does the name Lysander Spooner mean anything to you? And if they know, you know they're in the club. If they don't know, then they're not really in the club. That's why if you go back and you listen to our little grilling of Hannah at the end of last week's episode, I go, Hannah, do you know who Lysander Spooner is? No, who's that?
I didn't know either, and I didn't want to say anything about fear of being mocked.
But the it's just
it's going to happen.
No, go ahead.
Oh, I was just gonna say that you can quote people all day long, but it's just without context. I mean, how many people do you think are gonna go pick up a Spooner book or something on Spooner tomorrow?
I never.
That's
have.
Not the point.
I'm seriously asking. I mean, do you actually think?
I don't think a bunch of people are gonna pick up Lysander Spooner. What I do know is that when you get Lysander Spooner and you get America is not a democracy, it's a republic, when those words are on the public record, that is
that's a wrong statement. America was a republic. I think that's a little bit better way to put it.
You're just really harshing everybody's mellow. We've made a concerted
17th Amendment.
Listen, we've made a concerted effort on this show and on our blog to be positive and show the positive side of libertarianism.
you invited
and in one,
me here.
One episode, you've ruined our credibility.
No.
You really are.
I brought things back down to earth from the fantastic feeling everyone has.
Didn't bring it down to earth. You're trying to dig a hole and throw it into the hole.
I'm not as
like
stated.
We're living on real. Plane talking about legitimate stuff, and you're just like, you guys are stupid.
I wouldn't go that far. I mean, I think you guys are moronic. But
all right, let's.
But she does it in such a fun, funny way.
I know, that's why we love her. She's like Mary Tyler Moore.
No, but honestly, I think as far as Rubio goes, yesterday will be looked back upon by people and say that this was when Rand Paul became a national figure. Charles Krauthammer said the same thing.
Oh, that was such a...
Oh, my God. Charles Krauthammer. I mean, I don't get me wrong. I don't like people on, like, the special report often. But when you get someone on the special report to... I mean, because regardless of their politics, what they believe in, they understand politics. Regardless of what they believe in, they understand how politics works. And when Charles Krauthammer goes on there and says it was a genius political move, this will be the day that everyone recognizes that Rand Paul became a national figure in the Republican Party, that is legitimate, because a lot of base Republicans.
Oh, I respect that. I mean, I respect.
I mean,
him.
I mean, yeah. I mean, I'm not going to say Charles Krauthammer is my guy when it comes to like philosophical ideals or anything. But I mean, I can respect people who understand how politics work.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't really like Rush Limbaugh on a lot of stuff, but that guy knows how Democrats think.
He does.
I mean, he knows how they think, and I can respect him for being, you know,
good at what he does.
Good at what he does. Krauthammer's the same way. Him and a lot of people on Special Report understand how politics works. And when he said that, I was like, man. I mean, honestly, just take a step back for a second and just, like you were saying earlier,
wrap it up.
Eric Erickson, Charles Krauthammer, Laura Ingraham. I mean, good God. In the same boat, Glenn Greenwald.
Code Pink, Van Jones.
When Code Pink is in the same boat with Eric Erickson, something happened.
Creighton just put a pillow over his lap, so it didn't get awkward in here.
All right.
But anyway, so yesterday will be remembered as the day that Rand Paul became a national figure and Marco Rubio made himself look like a McDouche.
Greg referenced earlier that there was a meeting last night to build bipartisanship. And we're in Indiana. Indiana Senator Dan Coats was there, and
I hope everyone listening was, you know, I'm assuming you guys followed this. Hopefully you guys called your senators, because I actually did call And it took me, it only took me two times to get through Coates' office, and it was a staffer. I didn't know he was at that.
Right.
He was at that
dinner.
I can't
believe he got invited. He's so irrelevant.
Yeah. He is not as irrelevant as you think because he's been there before. Because
he's a lobbyist.
I heard through the grapevine that he legitimately thinks that Obama is trying to rectify the aloof myth, that he's really actually trying to reach out to the Republicans, and that was a legit dinner. And it had Lindsey Graham, Coburn, Coates.
He's reaching out to non-players. Leadership.
No.
Not leadership.
No.
McCain and Graham are players.
McCain.
They're players in the establishment.
Right.
They are.
Right. The Gang of Eight.
They are who.
Coburn.
Better way of saying it. They are who Obama thinks matter.
Yeah. Right. And McCain is the most hated man in the Senate. Hated by his own party, hated by the Democrats.
But McCain is somebody that the media listens to. He's smart because he picked the people that go on Meet the Press. Picked the people that go on Face the Nation.
And they're going to try so hard to make that be the news story.
Right.
I mean, NBC had that as their headline.
Why it was so huge.
They are going to try and make that in the upcoming days be the story, and everyone's going to see how forced it is.
It's a non-story almost.
It really is.
It's a non-story.
I mean, no one...
What was the legitimate reason that all these Republican senators and Obama got together at this hotel last night?
He hasn't been able to make any headway with the leadership of the Republican Party, with McConnell and with Boehner. So his plan is to try to say, hey, I'm not such a bad guy. I'm going to reach out to sort of the... I guess I was wrong. It's influential people in the party, but it's not leadership.
Right.
And the plan is, Boehner and McConnell didn't let any of the details leak out about the grand bargain that was almost worked out.
Right.
And so Obama last night went to that dinner and started just... He just opened the kimono. And he said, this is what I offered. I offered chain CPI. I offered several other places. Is this something you could get on board with? And then he even paid for the dinner at the Jefferson Hotel.
Right.
You mean we paid for the dinner?
Well, no. He personally paid for it, but he took the presidential motorcade over. It probably cost $50,000.
Right, yeah. So he told the people that leak everything in the world, don't get between McCain and Graham and a camera, you know? And so they come out today and, you know, Senator Coates, our senator here in Indiana, the true conservative.
Oh my God!
Goes out and says,
"Don't ever say that."
Says
again.
I fully,
even jokingly.
That's what he says about himself. That's
don't,
what
I know.
You mean a true Virginian or North Carolinian or wherever the hell he lives?
And so he comes out today. I fully support Rand Paul. But then he votes for Brennan. Also voting for Brennan was Marco Rubio, by the way. And you know, Coates and all these guys, they just, you know, they come out and they say they support stuff, but I guess we expect that people will just be sort of BSing us. Then McCain and Graham come out and they just give us the truth of what they actually think. And I guess we really, I don't know why we're so mad about it, because we should actually respect McCain and Graham for coming out and saying what they actually believe, which is the following. John McCain says, the country needs more senators who care about liberty, but I'll do it in my McCain voice. But if Mr. Paul wants to be taken seriously, he needs to do more than pull political stunts that fire up impressionable libertarian kids in their college dorms.
That is really good.
You know what? I actually thought it sounded more like Bush.
Did you really?
Yeah.
So he basically just came out and said, oh, well, they're just all these libertarian kids. We need to, he's doing a disservice to the American people by spreading myths and lies.
He totally just poured salt or whatever metaphor you need to say that he basically just pissed people off, and now they're gonna be like, you talking about me?
Yeah.
Oh,
the 600 million Twitter users.
Oh my God.
Trending globally.
He basically just caused everybody who supported Rand Paul to be like, bring it.
Why don't young people like us? I just don't get it.
I know. Honestly,
working to keep the Republican Party a club of old white men since 1985.
He made himself look like the bad guy and us look like Jean-Claude Van Damme or something.
Oh.
I mean, it's like, oh, you're gonna try and see, okay, I'm gonna come back and I'm going.
No, but that's how they really think about it. They don't really see libertarians as a political force. What they're missing, and if you go and read Cato's study on this, it's called The Libertarian Vote in the Age of Obama. Libertarians make up like 20% of the independent vote, and the independent vote decides elections.
Yep, there's so few that's swayable.
Right,
like it's such people don't get that. They think this middle's huge. It's
right.
Tiny
because the people that are on this podcast, meaning myself, Maya, Creighton, like we work in the libertarian sphere. You know, the people that we're talking about that kind of make up that independent are more like Greg, who. You know, yeah, I get some libertarian tendencies, but you don't really know who Lysander Spooner is.
Yeah, I'm not a libertarian, like, big L party, but
right.
they, your message is what I believe, but
right.
I hang on to reality and try to deal with it.
Yeah. I try and be.
Well, we're quickly eroding that.
No. You totally are.
No, yeah. No. I will stand with Greg and say that I try and be the day walker.
Yeah.
Try and be the guy that, you know, knows all the libertarian stuff, but still realizes that the Libertarian Party is not going
to
win.
And you don't have those two factions don't have to compete. You know, it's
no.
The interests are aligned.
Yeah.
Yeah
why
but,
don't you
but,
hey
but,
hey Creighton,
but,
why don't you go read Jeffrey Tucker?
But back to the point.
To John McCain.
Okay. So, before we keep
Creighton's keeping me on message.
Before we get to what John McCain and Graham said, let's just point out that yesterday you had Rand Paul filibustering, talking about constitutional rights and everything we've been talking about, and at the same time, you had John McCain and Lindsey Graham eating dinner with the president.
Yep.
Nothing more has to be said about who is really the conservatives and who is the establishment hacks.
Yep.
Nothing more.
Boom roasted.
That's it. I mean, that's all there is. And momentum shifted seismically yesterday to a new direction in the Republican Party.
It was a ground shift. But it was a recognition of the shift in the base of the Republican Party that's been going on for at least 5 years.
No, the only way it truly becomes a shift is if the money really does get behind the libertarian guys. If the money stays behind the Karl Rove, John McCain, Lindsey Graham crowd,
they proved
then
they couldn't win, though. Karl Rove proved he could not. He had all the resources in the world and
Carl,
flopped.
He's
still got the phone numbers.
And he does.
Ted Cruz doesn't.
No. Ted Cruz is a recognition that people who the Liberty Movement endorses can win and get money behind them. These people were part of YALPAC, which is not associated with this podcast. They were endorsed by YALPAC, who is the Political Action Committee arm of Young Americans for Liberty, which... They endorsed Massey, who won. They endorsed Cruz, who won. I mean, they endorsed Amash, who won again. And
did
they endorsed Amash in
the
beginning.
Did they endorse any libertarians?
No, they didn't endorse any libertarians.
Of course not. I mean, okay. Everything that happened, all this stuff, it's all great. But there's a huge cutoff where you get the libertarians get a huge cutoff. There's a huge cutoff where you get libertarians that are...
He didn't even mean to do it.
I'm
going to
make
natural.
This point for people that actually do read Spooner and are actually intellectually honest to themselves about things is where the whole message here in a lot of these guys, they don't take it far enough. And as this is the whole utopian crap you're going to bring up against me anyways. But it's the whole ideals of liberty. You know, we have all these people, we have all these names, but you talk to all these people that support them. Can they really talk about liberty in an honest fashion without pulling up cognitive dissonance? I mean, can
what?
They really?
What?
Who?
The supporters of Amash and everyone else.
Cognitive what?
Are you asking if people?
What?
If you're wait a minute.
They're
wait a minute. Hang on.
And
I want to get. I want to get an answer to this. Are you asking if Young Americans for Liberty and Students for Liberty people and Campaign for Liberty folks? Are you asking whether or not they know liberty philosophy?
You're about to get savage.
Is that what you're asking?
Let's see here.
No. Are you questioning the
not
amount?
Them. Not
that's who the Amash supporters are.
Just them? No, just them? There's no one else? No one else voted for him except YAL people?
No.
Really?
I'm saying the supporters, the people that are on the ground doing volunteer work for him, working on his campaign. That's
the organizations, the actual organizations, they may know. There's a possibility. I think they're still wrong about a lot of things. A lot. And how they're going about it. But I think for the most part, people were okay when Rand Paul was saying, you know, basically, I'm not going to denounce the wars overseas, but, you know, it's, you know, there could be instances where the government can say, yeah, we need to wholesale slaughter countries of people because it's okay.
Time out. Rand Paul did not denounce the wars, but he did go as far as saying that you should be able to cut defense spending in a Republican.
Oh, my God.
A Republican saying that, you cannot deny a Republican saying that is a big freaking deal.
But, no, because there's been quite a few of them.
No, there hasn't.
But that does that mean that you get to call him a libertarian? I mean, the whole
he cannot be called a libertarian at any point. He's
not,
so far outside of the realm of what a libertarian is.
I'm not
libertarianism
saying that.
I disagree with that. You're using a very, very small definition based on voluntarianism.
No, I'm not. As long as you support national aggression against other countries without a declaration of war and true reasoning, you cannot be considered a libertarian, even in a minarchist
standpoint. Dude, if you took your philosophy to the specific logical end as to how you should act, you need to go live in a cabin by yourself. You are supporting our society by living in it.
Boom.
Well, I mean, I haven't paid taxes for a while, but
I'm going to delete that. I would delete that part out, but you made me mad.
Well, I've been fired, so I haven't paid taxes. And I spent a very long period of my life not paying taxes. I mean, working under the table. I do everything I can to support agorism and everything else. Now, I understand, I'm accustomed to a certain lifestyle, so I'm kind of a whore when it comes to that. But, yeah, if we took it to that, yeah, and well, there come a time where things are going to get a little hairy, and I'm going to actually have to back up my words with my actions. Yeah, that's going to happen. It's going to be a horrible place. But I'm saying Rand Paul could do a lot more than what he did, and we should not call him a libertarian. Not even libertarian-leaning, because I think that's dishonest. What does libertarian-leaning mean? I mean, we can say, you know, Obama came out and said, we should have equality under the law. Well, he's libertarian-leaning, isn't he?
That is not, but that is totally, that is, what are, that is a total red herring, straw man, whatever you want to describe it.
Creighton is
that
losing
is an argument. That is an argumentum ad that is reducto ad absurdum. That is what that is.
I don't know what
he brought out the Latin.
No. That is what that is. You're saying that Rand Paul, who policy-wise has been in line with liberty principles as they have come up in the federal government as best as they can on maybe on every issue but except sanctions, and you're saying that he is not liberty-leaning because we would have to call Obama liberty-leaning for saying he supports equal rights under the law?
Well, we're talking about what Rand Paul was saying he supports.
But he's
yesterday.
Backed his crap up with action, man.
Really?
He has actually backed his crap up with votes.
Has he introduced a bill to ban drones from ever being used on U.S. soil?
But he is. Has he fought the NDAA so that you can to try and ensure that you have a due process under the law? Did he win by himself? No. Did he fight for it? Yeah.
We can go that way. We call him a libertarian.
All right, hi talkers.
I think there needs to be Jim Crow for libertarians. Unless you can go on Reddit and have an informed opinion between the mutualism and the voluntarism subreddits, you don't get to use the label.
All right, let's finish.
But we didn't even get to, we didn't finish talking about McCain and Grant.
All right, you gotta wrap it up because we're real long on time, and I want to play Dennis Rodman.
So
we have to talk about it.
So Graham and McCain came before the Senate today because last night before it was over, McConnell said, "I will extend cloture for an hour per person or something." Some procedural thing where they got to debate it some more today, where it wasn't just you start the day and then vote happens. It was actual debate today, and that's when Graham and McCain decided they would grace us with their benevolent presence,
their Waldorf and Statler like presence.
That is exactly what it was. But they came down and I mean they put their own nails in their coffins. I mean they drew Rand Paul made a statement. And it took Lindsey Graham and John McCain today to draw the line to say, we're the Sith and you guys are the Jedi. And that is exactly what – that is just – that is what they did today. McCain and Graham, oh, you – we've never killed an American citizen. I think it's just – I am offended – Lindsey Graham, I am offended that the senator from Kentucky would even ask such a question.
What a Lindsey Graham.
Yes. For anyone listening, we need to move Lindsey Graham into a word that just describes someone being a douche. So from now on, whenever you feel like saying – oh, dude, you're being an a-hole. Just say, dude, you're being such a Lindsey Graham.
Go to our Twitter feed. We laid it out. It means someone who is without honor, someone without character, someone who is a hypocrite. That is being a Lindsey Graham.
Every time I see him, I'm just like, what a pathetic individual. If he was born in New York, he could have just been an art dealer in Greenwich Village and lived with his French boyfriend, Miguel, and it would have been fantastic. Instead, he's a Republican.
Not that there's anything wrong.
No, it's fantastic, but he's not being honest.
All right, let's...
Can we just go and put in, like, the internet authority that Lindsey Graham is should be equated to Santorum?
Yes, the
Urban Dictionary.
Santorum and Lindsey Graham could be used the same way, right?
This is probably the one thing that Maya will agree with all of us on the whole night is that Lindsey Graham is the scorn of the earth.
Maya, if you try to refute that,
if you whip out your giant butt on this one, you're off the podcast.
No, but honestly, real talk, they established themselves as being the old guard. They are the old guard. They're the lost cause. They represent everything that the Republican Party has to not be if it wants to do anything of substance. And they represent what is holding back the Republican Party from being anything legitimate. And they represent the worst that politicians can be.
And they're not even conservative. They're the Mr. Moderates of the party.
Yes, they are. They are the hawk wing. They're the neoconservative wing. Yesterday, Rand Paul said made it okay for Republican to say you don't have to be a hawk on war. And McCain and Graham came out and said that if you don't be a hawk on war, then you are a libertarian kid. You're a whiner. They set themselves up to be the villain for the future. I mean, there is a civil war in the GOP. It's been going on for a while. This finally casted into the spotlight for everyone to see, and the left has been trying to poke fun at it. But yes, today John McCain and Lindsey Graham unequivocally showed that if the Republican Party does not get on board with stuff that Rand Paul is saying, then it will go the way of the old geezers and it's over.
Yep.
John McCain,
small regional party.
John McCain and Lindsey Graham are what is killing the Republican Party, and they have shown themselves to be dishonorable hacks who don't believe in anything anymore.
I'm a maverick.
All right, let's move on to Dennis Rodman. Let me just let George Stephanopoulos, who really has fallen from grace.
Oh, my.
He was the White House chief of staff. He crafted this miraculous win in 1992. And now this has happened to him.
And we are back now with this week's weirdest encounter. Top of the news in North Korea. The first American to meet Kim Jong-un, not John Kerry or even Jimmy Carter. Nope, it was Dennis Rodman, a.k.a. The Worm. They watch basketball. Kim is a big fan, but that was just the beginning. Some ice skating, too, an aquarium visit. Then a long dinner and lots of drinks with one of the world's most mysterious and dangerous men.
I love him. I love the guy. He's awesome. It was amazing how they were so honest.
That about a dictator who presides over prison camps, allows millions to starve, and has threatened to destroy the United States. Amazingly, Rodman now has more first-hand impressions of Kim than any other American.
There is nobody at the CIA who could tell you more personally about Kim Jong-un than Dennis Rodman, and that in itself is scary.
All right, so here's some of his impressions of Kim Jong-un.
Dennis, I think when you grow up in an environment, especially when your grandpa and your father, the one thing, the kid's only 28 years old.
You called them great leaders. Do you really believe that?
No, what I saw in that country... and I saw how people respect him and his family. That's what I mean about that.
Aren't
great
they forced
leaders there.
To?
Huh?
Aren't they forced to?
Well, I say no, because I think he's going to change something, because he says a different view. Because I sat with him for 2 days, and the one thing he asked me to give Obama something to say and do one thing. He wants Obama to do one thing, call him.
He wants a call from President Obama?
That's right. He told me that.
And here is probably my favorite quote out of the entire thing.
He said, if you can, Dennis, I don't want to do war. I don't want to do war. He said that to me.
Did you say, why don't you pick up the phone and call President Obama?
No, you know, it's a different story. It's a different story because guess what? The kid's only 28 years old. 28. He's not his dad. Not his grandpa. He's 28 years old.
So you think he's different. What did he tell you about America?
He don't want to do war. He don't want to do war. I love that. He's so awkward just when he's talking. And it's hilarious to me that the person who has the most diplomatic experience with this guy who has nuclear missiles and is threatening to do war, even though he's saying he doesn't want to do war, which I wonder what that's about.
I feel like after their little threat that they vow to nuke the United States, I can't help but think of the Kim Jong Il from Team America.
Right.
Like, just the, like, hi, bitch.
Well, I don't, you know, this whole war thing, whatever. I mean, North Korea is just a joke. I mean, we could get some rednecks from Kentucky and go up there. I mean, we could get 10% of the people that voted for Rand Paul go to North Korea and absolutely destroy their country. So that's, you know, irrelevant. What I do want to say is I give mad props to that little Kim dude. Is that he put a call out and he put an open arm out to the Pirate Bay and said, we will help you continue the fight against Hollywood and their idiots out there that want to charge $30 a movie. So the Pirate Bay is now pretty much being, you know, ported through North Korea.
They have two, the Kim Jong-il and Un, they have two loves. The Kim Jong-il really loved movies. He produced movies all of the time.
That's why he hated Team America
Why he hated it. It wasn't like Adolf Hitler, who thought that The Great Dictator that Chaplin did was hilarious. He loved it. Kim Jong-il hated Team America. And
if there's anyone who was more in threat of being bombed by North Korea, it wasn't the United States. It was Trey Parker and Matt Stone.
So why Dennis Rodman? Well, think about it. I'm 29. How old are you, Maya?
26.
All right. How old are you, Greg?
27.
27. Creighton, you're what, 22? 23.
23.
Let's go with 23. All right, so at 29, Rand Paul 2012.
I forgot what
Marco.
You don't even know the Constitution.
I forgot what year it was.
So
that's all you need to know about Creighton and what his opinions mean.
Give the mic to Greg.
I forgot what year it was.
Greg, when we were the same age as Kim Jong-un, when we were kids, what was the team?
The Bulls, man.
The Bulls.
The worm.
Right.
I had the worms.
Kim Jong-il and Kim Jong-un, that was their thing. As father and son, they bonded over the Bulls. And the Bulls, Michael Jordan was beloved by them. And all he wanted to do was meet Dennis Rodman because that was his. It's hilarious to me. Like, you see, like, this little, like, light of humanity shining through and you identify with it because you're the same age. So, but that's why Dennis Rodman.
Well, also he and I'm gonna have to look. If memory serves me right, he played in like a series of state sponsored 10-day contracts in the North Korean NBA.
Really?
Yeah. So he had been there before and like had established relationships. So that's why. I mean, when he's your back channel,
we're not going to discuss.
So as a pro basketball player, if you would like to know what hitting the gutter is, would be playing in the North Korean basketball.
Well, he was like 41 when he did it.
And going to discuss the North Korean NBA and what that must be like.
Oh my,
that must be terrible.
All right, dream team.
Final thoughts for this incredibly long episode. If you're still with us, we love you very deeply. Thank you so much, Greg. What are you? Let's actually go to Creighton first.
No, go to me last.
Final thoughts of the week.
Me last.
I will wrap up and say, please go to iTunes, give us a comment, give us a like, spread the show. If you like the show enough to listen to an hour and a half of Creighton falling in love all over again with Rand Paul and Maya with her giant butt, and then me and Greg just sitting here laughing at it, then please go to iTunes, comment, give us a star, share the podcast on your Facebook wall, on your Twitter, even on your Google+, so maybe one person will see it. We would greatly appreciate
it. Dude, twisting the knife.
Yeah. So still having creative differences, so if anybody's wondering.
Unaddressed.
Greg, what is coming up in the next week that you'd like to address or maybe we didn't get to today?
It's not in the next week, but there is a bill, and this is for people in Indiana. There's a bill coming up in the State House Senate, and I believe it's called it's Senate Bill 0344, and it's the creation of a child registry. So essentially, you're a parent of your kid, and you create a point of contact that they have access to, and all marketers have to have access to, like, the only way they can have access to them is through that point, or they get fined. And it's set up to filter out them being subject to any alcohol advertising, cigarettes, drugs, pornography, anything considered pornography, anything like that. And it is a total scam. There's only one company out of Utah that does it called Unspam Technologies. They're being represented by the Corydon Group here in Indiana, a lobbying firm. And they charge the marketer half a penny every time they want to check an email address. But when you have an email address list of 100 million people, it's insane. And then they get fined if they don't check it. And it doesn't even raise money for the government. Utah and Michigan have it, and they both lose money off of it. So, I mean, it is just a bad law anyway. And on top of all that, Yahoo, AOL, and Gmail all allow you to already filter out that kind of advertising through ads and flag it as spam. And I just think it's the stupidest thing I've ever heard. But they want to force people in the Indiana Senate and Indiana House to say, oh, I don't want to protect children.
Right.
That's all.
Great trick. Maya, anything you'd like to promote? Anything we didn't get to talk about?
Oh, there's always something. I just want to promote myself because I'm awesome. I've got my own show now on the Indiana Talks Network. You need to check that out because if you like this, you'll probably like my show better. It doesn't have Creighton on it or Statist, so we're good there. Also, check out my website, creatingmaya.com. I just added a new person on there that's wanting to really get excited about some views and get their message out there. I'm still going to be doing my podcast on that with Spangle here. I'm getting to the point where I'm pretty sure I'm going to just start hitting him with a stick, and you guys could just listen to the sounds of his skull being bashed in. So look forward to that. That's about it. I mean, as far as what to talk about, I mean, there's the Indiana State House has some amazing legislation going through it that just is huge. I mean, we're talking about giving people the local poison control centers the ability to ban a substance with no recourse for almost, with how it's written, almost any reason they want, all in the name of banning synthetic drugs. So look forward to having basically everything in your house that could be considered dangerous banned by some moron that spent way too much time in college and got hired by the government.
All right, Creighton, anything that we missed over the week or anything that you'd like to wrap up and say? Anything gone on this week that caught your attention?
Quick promo, the Young Americans for Liberty, Indiana State Convention, Young Americans for Liberty, not being affiliated with this podcast in any way, shape, or form.
You don't even have to say that anymore because we're not on the LPIN network.
Yeah, but I still want to say it. The state convention is not this weekend, but next weekend. I'll post a link on the website again, but it's open to anybody, so if you've got $25 you want to fork over, or if you want to become a dues paying member, and then you can only have to fork over $10, it's open to everybody. It's going to have big speakers, trainings, networking. It's really good. It's going to be awesomeness. So I recommend everybody to check that out. bear with me here.
We always do.
This was literally I wrote this like 10 minutes after he, because I watched the whole thing yesterday. I heard about it. I was in class when he started it, and I heard about it on. I just like reading Facebook, and I saw all the tweets and stuff, or the Facebook posts. I was like, what the hell's going on? I went over to if you've ever been to IEPY, they have computers near the elevators that anyone can use. And I went there to start watching on C-SPAN on the internet, and I stood there for like 3 hours watching it. And I was finally like, I gotta go home. And I went home, and I finished watching it at home. I watched the whole thing.
He got emotional about it.
Oh my
he
god!
Did. I woke up. I've had a lot of tooth pain lately, and I woke up at 3 a.m. with my tooth radiating pain, and I was like, all right, while I'm laying here, I'm gonna check my Facebook. I open up a message. Guys, seriously, I'm getting emotional over this. It's 3 a.m. I laughed so loud I woke my wife up.
Okay, but this is me like 10 minutes after he relinquished the floor. And So I okay. Rand Paul did something today that is not often done in Washington, and by this I don't mean simply a filibuster that stays on topic throughout. He touched on something far deeper and far loftier than partisan rhetoric or strategic messaging. He brought upon the Senate a principle, the principle that in America the president is not a king, that in America the rule of law is supreme and not arbitrary power, that in America you have rights that not only exist independent of the government, but rule it. This day will probably not go down in history with as much prestige as it deserves. It will be spun, it will be critiqued, its humorous bits will be extracted for sound bites, and the Senate will get back to being a body of old geezers who don't believe in anything anymore. I, however, will never forget it. I stood with Rand Paul all day. I stood in shock that these things were being brought up in the Senate, that Lysander Spooner's words are now on the public record, that America is not a democracy, it is a republic, is on the public record. But more than anything else, I will remember this day because it is the first time I felt such respect for a senator. The respect I have for Rand Paul after today challenges the respect I have for his father. He espoused real constitutional principles, and he did so with conviction. He stood up within a den of vipers and thieves, and he stood for liberty and your rights. It's been almost 800 years since the Magna Carta, and in America, it seems, we still have to debate the legitimacy of the protections it espoused. Nothing more effectively proves that the price of liberty is eternal vigilance. I am so proud of Rand Paul. I am excited for the future of the liberty movement because today was a game changer.
Did you put that up on the website?
Yeah, that will be posted on We're Libertarians as soon as Creighton gets home, so you can share that.
I already
with all
did.
Is that
friends.
The same
right,
one
good.
As last night?
Yeah.
I remember when I read that last night. I was like, I can just see Creighton standing up, kicking a neighbor down a well, and screaming, "This is Sparta!"
I woke up this morning and I went, "America!"
All right, thank you for listening to We Are Libertarians, and we'll catch you next week. Music for We Are Libertarians is provided by Hoosier musician Brian Keith Wallen. Please check out his website, briankeithwallen.com. The song is Bad Spell. This podcast is produced by What Is a Hoosier Productions.